morning, everybody. Last week we concluded in chapter 3, the end of Pasuk 30. We didn't finish the chapter. The subject that we're going to have to deal with today, and this is going to be a shiur that in a real sense is going to give us food for thought or background for a good part of Sefer Shmuel Bet, most of Shmuel Bet, even into Melachim Aleph. And that is, for 40 years, or for that matter we will see even more than 40 years, the right-hand man of David is Yoav ben Tzruya. What we know about Yoav ben Tzruya at this particular moment in time is, first of all, he was the one whose soldiers met up with Avner ben Ner at the pool in Givon, which signaled the beginning of the battle between the house of David and the house of Shaul. It is also Avner ben Ner now who has been killed by Yoav ben Tzruya. How are we supposed to look at this act? Was it a justifiable act? Was it an act of murder? David, of course, as we know, David has placed a curse on Yoav ben Tzruya. He's placed a curse on the house of Yoav. That was Pasuk 29. Yachulu al Rosh Yoav, Vel Kol Beit Aviv. Let there descend upon the house of Yoav and all of his father's house. Val Yikoreit mi Beit Yoav Zav Mitzoro Machazik Bapelach Venofel Bachereb Vechasar Lechem Deshel Nab. Be removed from the house of Yoav a Zav, a Mitzora, one who has to work very hard for a living, one who falls by the sword, one who is poor. The last Pasuk 30 was that V'yoav v'Avishai Ochid, Yoav and his brother Avishai, remember there had been three brothers. The third was Asael, the one who was cut down by Avner. V'yoav v'Avishai Ochid horgul Avner, they killed Avner, al asher heimit et Asael achiem b'Givon v'Milchama, because he had killed Asael, their brother, in Givon, in war. We have a number of problems. Problem number one, of course, is that, yes, why indeed doesn't David find some way to remove Yoav? Yoav is going to remain side by side with him for another 40 years. There are even going to be other incidents when Yoav is going to kill Avshalom, despite the fact that the king has said that no one should hurt a hair on Yoav's head. Yoav is going to... Am I mixing up the names again? I started already. You all understand. Yoav is going to be a constant companion, which is going to raise all sorts of questions. He is going to be a companion who is going to outlive David in the end, and David, in his final will and testament to Shlomo, is going to say, make certain that Yoav does not go down to the grave in peace. And the fact is that Shlomo is going to make certain that Yoav is going to be killed. Which means that Yoav here is a character whom we don't know fully how to assess him. Is he a killer? Is he one who spills blood? Is he the companion to David? Why doesn't David do anything about Yoav ben Tzruya? What I want to do today is just give you a picture of Yoav ben Tzruya, so that afterwards, as we come to various incidents in the life of Yoav ben Tzruya, we're going to have to judge them and gauge them in light of what I say today. To begin with, where was Yoav ben Tzruya raised? What do we know about Yoav ben Tzruya? We know, of course, that there were eight sons of Yishai. Yishai of Bethlehem had eight sons. He had two daughters. The daughters were Abigail and Tzruya, a different Abigail, not the same Abigail who is the wife of David. That means David has two sisters, Abigail and Tzruya. Tzruya has three children: Amasa, Yoav,
and Abishai. So Yoav ben Tsruya is a nephew of David. He's a grandson of Yishai. So what kind of a home is he raised in? He's raised in Bethlehem, in the house of Yishai. So first of all, we know he's an Einikol. This is a family that the Navi tells us is a family of Malchus. This is a royal family. Royalty. Malchut Beit David is going to come from the house of Yishai. The Gemara tells us the following about Yishai v'ho ish b'mei Shaul Zakein, in the days of Shaul, Yishai, the Zeda of Yoav ben Tsruya, was old. Bo ba'anoshim, he came amongst people. This was a pasuk we learned earlier in Shmuel. Says the Gemara the following, Omar Rabba v'yisaymer avzvid, ze Yishai avi David, the man that we're talking about, the man that is old in the days of Shaul, this is Yishai, the father of David. Sheyotzob beuchlusya, he went out with a great number of people. Vedorash beuchlusya, and he spoke, he taught a large number of people. The Gemara even says that he had 600,000 people who followed him. That means we're talking about Yishai, who is a great leader of people. Yishai, who is a great Talmud Chacham, he's a great scholar and a teacher of people. We know something else about Yishai. We know that Yishai is also the Tzaddik Hador. He is the most pious person in the generation. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, Arbo'a Meitu Be'et Yoshel Nochash, there are four people that died only because of the serpent, the snake, as a result of the sin of Adam and Chava with the snake. So death was decreed upon all of mankind. There were a few people who never in their lives committed a sin. If they committed no sin, why did they die? Says the Gemara, they died only because of the Ethiopian Nachash, because of that original Nachash. So we are talking, therefore, about a man who is the most pious man in his generation. He is the Tzaddik Hador. So the Gemara mentions that Yishai, the father of David, is one of those who dies only because of the Nachash. And one of them is Binyamin. But about Yishai, the Pasuk tells us that Yishai dies only because of the snake. Levad me Yishai, all of them we know only because we were told so, except for Yishai, because the Pasuk says the following, Ve'et Amosa, Som Avshalom Tachat Yoav Al-Hatzava, when Avshalom is going to rebel against his father, he is going to place Amosa, and we're going to see about Amosa later. Amosa is another member of the family. Amosa is the son of Abigail, the sister of Tsruya. Amosa is going to be the commander-in-chief of the forces of Avshalom, who are going to rebel against David. V'Amosa ben, the Pasuk says, Amosa ben Ish Ushmo Yitro HaYisraeli. Amosa was the son of a man whose name was Yitro, the Israeli. Ashebo el Avigail bat Nachash, who had come and lived with Avigail, the daughter of Nachash. So the Gemara asks, Avigail is not the daughter of Nachash. Avigail is the daughter of Yishai. Why does the Pasuk say that Yitro is the husband who lives with Avigail, the daughter of Nachash? And the Pasuk, to make certain that we know precisely who we're talking about, the Pasuk says, this Avigail is Achot Tsruya Ein Yoav. Avigail is the sister of Tsruya, who is the mother of Yoav. So now, we're going to know precisely who Amasa is. So the Gemara asks, how can the Pasuk say that Avigail is the daughter of Nachash? Avigail is the daughter of Yishai. So the Gemara answers, Ella, bat mi shemet bet Yoshel Nachash. She is the daughter of the one who died only because of the sin of Adam HaRishon with the Nachash. As far as Yishai himself was concerned, it's awesome. I'll tell you the truth is, it's frightening. I don't think we are even capable of understanding the piety of Yishai. We're talking about a man who never sinned, never did anything wrong. Yes.
What about when we first see the son being brought out? He doesn't bring out that being.
You're bringing up an old question that we had difficulty with when we were there. Well, sin, I'm not going to say that it is sin. You know who I'm going to blame for all of that? I'll tell you who. Now that you asked the question, I'm going to blame David. When I say blame, I mean that in a very special way. David concealed his greatness even from his father. That's real greatness. To be able to conceal how special he is, even from his father, who is the Tzaddik Ador, is no mean accomplishment. And therefore the only one who knows who David really is going to be Shmuel. And Shmuel himself, who is the prophet, doesn't see it himself. And God has to tell him, Ha'adam yirel ha'aynayim, man can see only with his eyes, v'ha'elokim yirel ha'levav, and God is the one who sees to the heart. That means what we're really being told over here is, and I thank you again for the question, Shmuel cannot see who David is. Yishai doesn't see who David is. So it's not that the fault lies with Yishai, the blame is all David's. He is masterfully able to conceal his own piety and his own greatness. I got out of that. I got out good. I got out good. Yes.
Don't we abjure the concept of original sin? This is not a concept.
No, it doesn't mean original sin. That's not what it means at all. God forbid, it doesn't mean that. It means what the Gemara wants to tell us is that there's a pasuk in Kohelet that says, "Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yechta." There is no pious person in the world who goes through a life without sin, which means for everybody sins in some way. But what are we supposed to do when there is somebody who doesn't sin and dies? So when the Gemara says because of the Nachash, it means because of the decree that God decreed. And remember, even that decree in and of itself was not necessarily punishment. There are many who say, and if man would live forever, do you think man would get things accomplished? When we have all the time in the world, we get absolutely nothing done. Didn't Aviva talk about the La'erev al Tanach Yadecha? Even Baboke, she didn't say it in Hebrew, Baboke Zera Zarecha La'erev al Tanach Yadecha. In the morning you plant the seed, and toward evening do not withhold your hand. What happens if there's no evening? I have literally all the time in the world to do whatever I want to do. Man would do nothing. Yes? Huh?
Became
a thing about Adam Sanua. No, that was by Shaul. When they go looking for Shaul, when Shmuel announces that Shaul is going to be the king, so it says that they looked for Shaul and they couldn't find him. He was Nechbal HaKelim. He was hiding behind the Kelim. So you should know that's also fascinating. Shaul also was one whom neither his father knew of his greatness. He talks with his uncle. His uncle has absolutely no clue of his greatness. And the only one who discovers it or who knows it is the Rabbeinu Shalom himself. Yes, this is it.
That's it.
That's it.
Aren't there midrashim though about David's mother and the relationship with Esau?
Yes and no, but that's not the topic for today. The topic for today, I must explain Yoav ben Tzruya. If we don't have an insight into Yoav ben Tzruya, we're going to have difficulty throughout the Sefer. So that means like this. We have now described the home in which he was raised. He has been raised in the home of the Tzaddik Hador, the most pious person of the generation. We are talking about the great teacher of Torah of that generation. He has been raised in a family that they know that he certainly knows now that this is going to be the house of kingdom of Malchut. Can you imagine Yoav
maybe he's a little boy, maybe I'm over-dramatizing it, but maybe not too much. He's aware of the surprise visit that Shmuel, who is the Navi, who is known Midan Vader Sheva, the Navi has come and made a surprise visit to the house of Yishai. He most probably is aware of the fact that one after another, the sons of Yishai are brought before Shmuel, and Shmuel is told by God, no, this one is not chosen and that one is not chosen. Then comes the, yes indeed, the great surprise of all. Shmuel has already seen, it seems, all of the sons of Yishai, and none of them are worthy of being king until he has to ask Yishai, is there another boy? Yes, yeah, he forgot. And then, you know, there's somebody little kinderlich running around the house, you know, so you forget the name, you forget a child. He forgets that there's a child, yes, David, he's out in the field. All right, Yishai doesn't even offer to send anybody for him until Shmuel tells him, go, bring him, because nothing is going to happen here until I see that son. And then finally, when David comes, God tells him, this is the one that has been chosen. That means there are dramatic events that are taking place in the house of Yishai in Bethlehem, and Yoav ben Tzeruya is a member of that household. Which means, in a word, which we will elaborate on later, and you're going to see it throughout Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Bet, you're going to see it through the Sefer. Yoav ben Tzeruya has dedicated his life to one thing and one thing alone. And that is to the establishment of Malchut Beit David. For him, the greatest good of all is establishing that kingdom. He is aware of the prophecy that was said by Yaakov Avinu, Lo Yosur Shevet Miyehuda Umichokik Miben Raglov. He's well aware of the fact, and he knew it long before Shmuel ever came to the house of Yishai, that Yehuda kingdom is going to be Yehuda. He learned it as a little child in Yeshiva who didn't learn Chumash and Rashi Lo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda Umachokim Mi Bein Raglot. The rule of the Jewish people is going to be from the house of Yehuda. V'lo Yikat Amim into him. There's going to be an ingathering of nations until ultimately from him is going to issue forth Mashiach Ben David. In other words, the salvation of all of mankind is going to depend on the house of Yehuda. But he knows something now that was not known before. He learned this as a child, but now he knows that the family in Yehuda from which Malchus is going to come from is his family. And it's his uncle David who's going to be the one who will establish Malchus Beis David. So that means like this. He knows the prophecy of Yaakov. Not only does he know the prophecy of Yaakov, he also knows the prophecy of Bilam that may not have been known to everyone else. In other words, everybody knew the prophecy of Bilam, but they didn't know who it applies to. Bilam is the one who says, Dorach kochav mi Yaakov v'kam shevet mi Yisrael. A star is going to shoot out of Yaakov, and there will arise a ruler over Israel. So Rashi is able to tell us now, who is the ruler that's going to arise over Israel? Zed David, this is David. When Yoav ben Tzeruya was learning those magnificent psukim in Parshat Balak, and he learns about the great prophecy that a great ruler is going to arise, so as a child, and he learns it in yeshiva, and he asks the Rebbe Laban, tell me who's going to be this great leader. So the Rebbe obviously had to tell him, Yoav, I don't know who the leader is going to be. Someday the Rebbe Shalom is going to reveal to us who this leader is. And there are magnificent psukim that Bilam says about this great leader. Yoav ben Tzeruya now knows what Yaakov Avinu was talking about. Yoav ben Tzeruya knows what Bilam prophesied about. And it's not something that's distant. It's something in his family, in this house. He may very well have been present at that dramatic historic moment. And as a child, or already as a young man, he realizes that what he is watching before his eyes is real history. Yeah. There are two kinds of history. There is Hollywood history. There is history that you make a greater task and you attempt to create instant history. And a lot of people don't really get unnerved about the instant history that is created, and there is real history in the making. Yoav ben Tzeruya is present when real history that's dramatically going to change the face of the Jewish people and ultimately all of mankind, he's present there. Yoav ben Tzruya dedicates therefore his life to Malchus Beis David, to the establishment of that Malchus, because he sees that as the fulfillment of the prophecy of Yaakov. It is the prophecy of Shmuel. It's more than the prophecy. It is the act of Shmuel. It's the prophecy of Bilam. It's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can there be anything greater that a man should dedicate himself then to that? Uncle David is Melech. This is Malchus for all time. What's going to be fascinating about this dedication to Malchus Beis David, and this I believe will at times stand Yoav in good stead and at times not. Let's think of a number of examples of people who dedicated their lives to others. There are some very, very ugly ones in history. Beria dedicated himself to Stalin. Harry Hopkins to Roosevelt. All right? Let's see. Who else dedicated themselves? Balin to Paris. Balin to Balin. All right. Okay. Rasputin. No, Rasputin is not a good... Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, I like that. Huh? Ruth to Naomi. There are people who dedicate themselves to others and to all that they stand for. There are people... Eliezer to Avraham. Oh, now we're beginning to come up. Eliezer dedicates his entire life to Avraham. Dole umashken mitoras rabo. He is the one who spreads the Torah of his Rebbe Avraham to... Excellent. I said excellent not because she's my wife, because that's the only one that I thought of before. Yehoshua is the Meshadek of Moshe. He is the alter ego of Moshe. His whole life is Moshe. The Gemara says, Pnei Moshe ki pnei chama, Pnei Yehoshua ki pnei yareach. Moshe is the sun, Yehoshua is the moon, which means all of the brilliance of Yehoshua is the reflection of Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the, more than anything else, he considers himself the Meshadek. He is the servant of Moshe. So there are people that we may have to differentiate, and by Yoav it's going to be extremely important. One can dedicate oneself to a person, or one can dedicate oneself to the idea that that person represents. The difference is the following. In the event that I dedicate myself to a person, I may very well no longer see any fault in that person. I will not be able to disagree with that person. One becomes a yes man. One is completely devoted to another. Yeah. Whatever he says, go. All great people have been surrounded by others who are dedicated and completely devoted to them. But then there are those who are dedicated and devoted to an idea. What is it? They just published recently one of the leaders of China who was the closest to Mao Tse, his doctor, who marched with him the great long march, and he just published his memoirs. Unbelievable. This Mao Zedong, whom the world saw as some kind of a great mystical leader, the Mao Zedong of the little red book with the sayings of Mao, his doctor, who was outwardly, personally devoted to him his whole life, finally gets the last licks in by a biography where he describes the man as an absolutely depraved person. He didn't wash himself for most of his life. He refused to wash himself. The man, probably people didn't get close to Mao because there was a stench. Mao refused to wash himself. He didn't know the meaning of a shower. He describes the depravity of the man. he was one a manuvel of the lowest order, the lowest order. But there are people who they may dedicate themselves to a person because of their great admiration and love for the person. It may be the idea. It may also be one's own skin. The doctor, of course, knew that one wrong move and he's dead. Yoav ben Tzeruya, while he is going to be personally dedicated to David, it's the idea of Malchus beis David. And the difference that it makes is he will be able to disagree with David. He's not going to be a yes man. Now, I want to take you one step further. And as we learn through the Sefer, we're going to look for indications of this. What do Chazal say about Yoav? What do we know about Yoav the man? What do we know about Yoav the man? So far we don't know much. All that we've learned so far is we know where he was raised, we know his family, we know his mother, we don't know his father. We don't know who his father was. But we know who his mother, we know who his Zayda, we know his uncles. What about him? The Medrash Tanchuma says, Atamotze, you will find, Shechocham Godol Hoya Yoav B'Torah. Yoav was a great wise man in Torah. V'Rosh Sanhedrin. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. Shenemar, a pasuk we're going to come to later, and we'll point it out when we get there. Yoshev B'Shevet Tachkemoni. He was the one who sat with the wise. We know that Yoav ben Tzruya is a great Talmud Chacham. Incidentally, in his great being a great Talmud Chacham, he has already become he is part of a machloket with David. The machloket with David is, was he justified in the killing of Avner ben Ner, or was he not justified? You'll first of all find out that there's a machloket in the Gemara whether he was justified or not justified. It was a machloket between David and Yoav. It is a machloket between the Rishonim and the Achronim. In halacha today, there's still a machloket. What is the machloket? Yoav ben Tzruya is the one who says, I am the Goel Hadam, I am the avenger of the blood of my brother Asael. I'm the avenger, and therefore I had a right to kill him. But the question is, Avner ben Ner is the one, we learned Avner ben Ner turns to Asael twice and he tells him, turn to the right, go to the left. Why should you try to kill me when I will strike you down? And Asael refuses to move, so Yoav kills him. From the point, so Avner, you are slow. Avner kills him. So now, the question is the following. Yoav ben Tzruya is going to say before the Sanhedrin, and later on he's going to say it to Shlomo, according to the Gemara, when Shlomo wants to put him to death. So he says, I am innocent. I am innocent of the of killing Avner ben Ner. I was justified in killing him. Why was I justified? Because the halacha is the following. Why does Avner kill Asael? Because Habola Hargacha, somebody is coming to kill you, Ashkem Hargo, and he has attempted to dissuade Asael from it. Now I think here comes the big question. What happens if one is capable of wounding the attacker? We started talking about it last week. If one is capable of wounding the attacker and can ward off the threat to one's own life by injuring the attacker, so then there's a difference of opinion. Does he have the right to kill because he's come to kill me, therefore I am granted license to kill? Or the only license that I'm granted is to ward off the threat to my life. And warding off the threat to my life would therefore mean that I should injure Asael rather than kill him. Yoav ben Tzruya held that Avner had the right to injure Asael but not to kill him. And Avner ben Ner held, and so did David hold, that Avner ben Ner is killing Asael during a time of war. And it's more than that. Not only that it's a time of war, it's more than that. The person whose life personal is threatened, the one whose life is threatened, does not have to try and find ways just to save himself. The one whose life is threatened has a right to kill. If there's a third party who watches Asael pursuing Avner,
and the third party is capable of wounding Asael and therefore saving Avner, then he's supposed to wound. But the one whose life is in danger has the right to kill. If Avner has the right to kill, then Yoav had no right to kill Avner. If otherwise, Yoav did have the right. This is a machloket. That means what's taking place over here is not a simple question. We cannot just say, well, Avner is a killer. Especially since we're talking about somebody whom the Gemara says of him that he's a gadol b'Torah. He's great in Torah. About Yoav. I'll get it straight. Yoav is gadol b'Torah. What are we to assume? Are we to assume that a gadol b'Torah is no more than a lowly killer? Of course not. It means that this is a question that is open to debate, and it has been debated throughout all of time. More than that, there is something that you should have noticed last week, or for that matter, maybe I should have pointed it out to you. Just a few psukim earlier. It says, Pasuk 23 in chapter 3, V'yoav v'cholatzavar sheritobo, Yoav and the entire army were with him, they come to Chevron. Who just left Chevron? Avner had just left Hebron because he had come to make peace with David. And not only that, he has come to promise David that he's now going to bring all of Israel under the rule of David. Yes, God is the one who has chosen you, and I'm now going to make certain that you are going to be the king. So now, as Avner leaves, Yoav arrives. Vayagidu liyoav lomer, to tell Yoav, Bo Avner ben Ner al HaMelech. Avner ben Ner came to the king. Vayishalchehu, he sent away, and he went in peace. Vayavo Yoav al HaMelech, Yoav came to the king. Vayom, and he says, Me osito, what did you do? What did you do? There is beauty to this Me osito. We're not talking about somebody who is so completely devoted to David that whatever David does is right. He's not a yes man. What he is interested in is Malchus Beis David. And if what it therefore requires is that he admonish David, he's going to do it. We're not talking about a starry-eyed chassid who was so overwhelmed in the presence of David that he can no longer question him. What David does, right or wrong, I am with him. Yoav is able to stand up to him. And he says, Me'a sita. Avner came to you. Why did you send him away? And he went away. You know Avner ben Ner. He's come here to seduce you. He wants you to live with a certain sense of security that Avner is on your side. He wants to know your comings and your goings. And to know everything that you do. Well, what I want to point out now is there's no response from David. The silence of David. That silence is extremely meaningful. You know what that silence means? That David is thinking to himself, maybe Yoav is right. David is not certain. We don't hear a response from David saying, Yoav ben Tzruya, what are you talking about? The man is honest, the man is forthright. He is now in the process of establishing Malchus Beis David. David is not certain. And therefore it says, Vayetze Yoav miim David. And then he goes out and he finds Avner and he kills him. According to the Gemara, of course, he did not kill him without bringing him before the Sanhedrin. Remember, we pointed that out. Last week in Pasuk 27, by Yoshev Avner Chevron, by Ateu Yoav, Yoav brought him El Toh Hashar in the gate. In the gate means that he brought him before the Shar Ha'ir. What is in the Shar Ha'ir? There is the Sanhedrin. The only thing is, when he killed him, he did not kill him according to the dictate of the Sanhedrin. Because the dictate of the Sanhedrin, murder, is a different death penalty. Here he runs him through sort of, you know, I don't want to use a running through, tachat, running through like a, you know, an eye for an eye. The way you killed my brother, this is the way you're going to be killed. Just want to... But there's another possibility. The other possibility is, and this is a difficult one to deal with, is it possible that somewhere, at some point, on some level, Yoav ben Tzruya's judgment, his judgment is colored, his judgment is harsh,
he may see things that aren't really there because Avner killed his brother. There is that possibility. There is that possibility that even the great Godel Batara, the great Yoav Ben Tzruya, may very well be acting not for that to which he has dedicated his life. He's dedicated his life to Malchus Beis David. Avner is number one. He sees him as a threat to Malchus Beis David, and he has good reason to believe that Avner is a threat to Malchus Beis David. Who's the one that has been standing in the way of David becoming king of all of Israel? Who is the one who has taken Ish-Boshet, the son of Shaul, and established him as king? The Gemara says about Avner ben Ner that he delayed the establishment of the house of David for 2 years while Ish-Boshet was king. So that means, for a man who has dedicated his life to the establishment of Malchus Beis David, who is the enemy? The greatest enemy of all is Avner ben Ner, because here is the man who's standing in the way, not in the way of Yoav ben Tzruya's mission in life. He's standing in the way of the prophecy of Yaakov Avinu, the prophecy of Bilam, the act of Shmuel. The man is standing in the way of history. So to him, Avner ben Ner is suspect. But on some level over there, one cannot be certain. On some level, there's the possibility that his own personal grievance to Avner ben Ner is that which has colored his judgment. Yes, Sarah. To tell you the truth, I have absolutely no way of knowing. I have no way of knowing, and I don't think that age makes a difference. On the contrary, I'm ready to assume that the nephew is younger than the greiser uncle, but that the nephew is a strong person, and you need a strong person. Not bad. Not bad, Sarah. You know, you came down to earth over here, and that was very good. Very good. I missed that point. That was good. Because Avner has turned on his own master. Who is to guarantee, very good, who is to guarantee that he will not turn on David? Very good point. Which means that the machloket that took place in this chapter between David and Yoav ben Tzruya is a question that remains open. Therefore, there are going to be other reasons why David is going to want that Yoav ben Tzruya not go down to the grave in peace. But it's more than that. What we will now be able to understand is, why does David maintain him as commander-in-chief? So first of all, you will understand also that he maintains him as commander-in-chief because he's dedicated to Malchus Beis David. He maintains him as commander-in-chief because there may be a strength that is demonstrated by Yoav ben Tzruya that even David himself is not capable of. On the other hand, we're going to see great strength by David, but David does not want his kingdom to be born in blood. This is something that we saw already earlier, a number of times. He did not want the establishment of his kingdom to be over somebody's dead body. That he did not want. A bit more about Yoav ben Tzruya. So we know that he's a Godel Batara. In the beginning of the second chapter of Melachim, after he is killed by a by Benoyahu ben Yehoyada under the orders of Shlomo. It says Vayikover bebeito bamidbar. He was buried in his house, near his house in the desert. The Gemara is going to learn a number of things from this. The Gemara asks, V'chi beito bamidbar oya? His house was in the desert. What do you mean he lived in the desert? He didn't live in the desert. What does it mean when it says he was buried near his house in the desert? Says the Gemara first, kamidbar. His house was like a desert. Ma midbar menuka migezel v'arayot. Just like a desert is a place where there's no stealing taking place. There's nothing there. No one is there. There are no sins of a physical nature. Arayot. Av beito shel Yoav, the house of Yoav, Chazal say Menucha was absolutely clean of gezel v'arayot. Talking about a man, most probably, that didn't bring home a staple from the office, a pencil. Chazal say about him, clean of any kind of gezel or arayot. The kever of Yoav ben Tzruya? I don't know. Yeah, Yishai is where? Yishai is Chevron, and we talked about Avner. Avner is right. Yeah. Ah, Chazal say why he was called after his mother. Because he wanted that people should know that he's of the house of David and Yishai. So it's on the mother's name. I think we had mentioned that Tzruya's his mother. Sure. Yes.
Could David have reflected that since Hashem did not think that he could build the Beit HaMikdash because of blood, he felt that for Shlomo's sake that his kingdom should not be established by the hands of Yoav. Bloody hands.
Yeah, you throw these curveballs over here, Toby. Anderson, I don't know even how to begin to deal with that. He tells Shlomo not to permit him to. No. I'm going to save that. I'm going to put that. We're going to save that. There's going to be, because there'll be a great deal to talk about the, yes, what indeed is meant by David not being permitted to build the Beit HaMikdash because Dam Larov Shafarta. All right, we're going to have to save that. I just want to talk about a little bit more about Yoav ben Tzruya. Once we know about him, then we will judge him differently. The Gemara says, again on the Pasuk of Ayikovet, the Beito Bamidbar, he was buried near his house in the desert. Otu Beito Bamidbar Haya was his house in the desert. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Kamidbar, his house was like a desert. Ma Midbar Mufka Lakol, just like the desert belongs to everybody. Av Beito Shel Yoav Mufka Lakol, the house of Yoav was open to all. And Rashi says, the poor could always come into the house of Yoav. It was an open house, a house of Gemilat Chasadim. And the Gemara even says about him, even the most expensive delicacies that were served in the house of Yoav, he shared with the poor. Another Gemara. Gemara says, Birchato shel Yoav gedola mishel Moshe. The blessing that was given by Yoav was even greater than the blessing that was given by Moshe. Toward the end of Shmuel, Beth, it's going to say that David sends Yoav out on a mission to take a census of the Jewish people. And Yoav gets upset. He gets upset with David. Why do you need this? He feels it's the wrong thing to do, to go out and count Jews. We'll have to talk about that. It's the last chapter. There's a great deal to be said about that. We're going to need a shir or two just to explain that chapter. But Yoav turns to David. So first of all, he disagrees with David. And he does that often. And I say that that's the mark of how special a person he is. He's devoted to an idea. And the idea is a divine one. But he's not blinded by his devotion to David. He may have been blinded by his blood relationship with his own brother. Together with the fact, of course, that he sees Avner ben Ner as the great
great threat to everything that he stands for. But at the end of the Sefer, when he tells David, why do you need a census of the Jewish people, he says, V'yosef Hashem Elokecha et el ha'am kahem v'kahem me'ah pa'amim. Let God increase these people 100 times over. V'enei Adoni ha'melech ra'ot, and the eyes of my master the king should be there to see a great, massive Jewish people. And then he goes on to say, what do you need this census for? This bracha, Chazal say, was even greater than the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Klal Yisrael at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. It means, most probably in modern terminology, we'd say, humefargen. He is a fargent. Let there be great increase of the Jewish people, and that David should see it. That David should see it. He does not need to be. He does not need to be the ruler. He has no aspirations to go beyond where he is. He knows he's not the king. He doesn't aspire to be that. He aspires to only one thing, and that's going to guide him throughout the Sefer, the establishment of Malchus based on it. I know, of course, what the problem, the questions, the more I make of Yoav ben Tzruya, the more one of you over here is going to ask me, so why indeed does David, in his last will and testament, he has nothing better to say than you were thinking of it? Go ahead. Huh? All right. Okay. Why, he has nothing better than to tell Shlomo to make sure that Yoav ben Tzruya should be put to death. We'll answer that too. We'll answer that too.
Could Yoav's attitude to David be colored and influenced by the fact that he grew up with him and that he was familiar with him? And for that reason, he was no yes man to him. If you grow up with someone, you have quite a good
I hear what you're saying. But I don't believe that anybody in the family grew up with David. He was the loner. If his father didn't even think about bringing him before Shmuel, on the contrary, the greatness of David, what contributed to the greatness of David was the fact that nobody did indeed grow up with him. What we also have to remember is when David is first threatened by Shaul and he has to flee home because Shaul wants to kill him and he's a fugitive out there, it said earlier in Sefer Shmuel, it said that his family and the house of his brothers all came down to him in the desert. That means Yoav ben Tzruya is already with David when David begins his wanderings as a fugitive from Shaul. He's going to be with him in Tziklag, in Yisrael, in En Gedi, in the Chursha outside of Hebron. He's going to be with him in Midbar Zif. Yoav ben Tzruya is not somebody who gets on the bandwagon of David HaMelech after David begins his rise to power. During the years that David HaMelech is a fugitive from justice and all of Israel is against him and hunting him, Yoav ben Tzruya is already at his side. Only because Yoav knows that this is the man who's going to be Malchus based David. It's always easy, and we talked about that yesterday in the Haftarah Shir, it's always easy or very comfortable to have an opinion that jives with the opinion of the majority of people out in the street. It's very, very difficult to remain dedicated to an idea when the polls out there are all opposed to you. I mean, somebody who's going to speak out, for example, I'm just using it as an example, somebody who will speak out against the Israel-Jordan peace treaty at the name of the Unkukim V. Absamu Shugina, who's off the wall. It takes courage or madness to say, wait a minute, maybe this is not all what it's cracked up to be. Yoav ben Tzruya is the one who's with David as David is pursued, wandering from place to place. That he's not one who has joined David only now. The Gemara says the following, a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, David reigned over all of Israel, Vayihi oseh mishpat utzedakah lechol amo, he did justice and charity for his whole people, V'Yoav ben Tzruya al Hatzavah. And Yoav ben Tzruya was in charge of the army. The two seem to be very strange. They don't seem to go together. Now, there's a description of what David is doing, justice and charity to all of his people, and then sort of, and Yoav ben Tzruya is in charge of the army. Wait a minute. Says the Gemara, if not for David, Yoav ben Tzruya would not have succeeded, and if not for Yoav ben Tzruya, David could not have succeeded. David was able to do Mishpatut Tzedakah because Yoav was al Hatzavah. Because there was a man like Yoav who made David HaMelech king. That's why David HaMelech was able to carry out his programs of Mishpat Utzedakah. It was because of a Yoav ben Tzruya. That means Yoav ben Tzruya is being given credit by the Pasuk for the justice and the charity, the goodness of the house of David. This is what Yoav ben Tzruya is being credited with. There's another thing that's said by the Gemara. They buried him in his house again in the desert. V'chimidbar haya beitol. Another place. This is a Talmud Yerushalmi that asks, "Where was his house in the desert?" El lamedcha. This comes to teach you shekivan shemet Yoav, sar tzva Yisrael. When Yoav, the commander in chief of the forces of Israel, died, nasu Yisrael kamidbar. Yisrael became like a desert. There's something they were lost without a Yoav ben Tzruya. In Toma, if you're going to say Shahoyah Bozes, so the Gemara says, what was it? In what way did they become a desert? So he says, either because when he would bring back the spoils of war, Bonelahem Beit Tvilotu Merchitzoit, he built bathhouses for the Jewish people. In Toma, if you want to, you can say that when he brought spoil from war, he gave food for the Chachamim, the Talmidim. That means he was an Oseik B'Tzartei Tzibur. He built that which was needed by Klal Yisrael with the spoils of war. And remember, would anybody have suspected Yoav ben Tzruya of having taken something off, skimmed off anything for the top? No, because his house was Menuka Migezel V'Arayot. Yes, Ria. Yes, that we have Shaul. There was the Bedin of Shaul, there was the Bedin of David. Shaul was not only king, he was also the head of the Sanhedrin, and so was David. It didn't mean, because we're talking about people who were great Talmidei Chachamim at the same time that they were great warriors. So, it means the following. It means the following. When we now come to anything that deals with Yoav ben Tzruya, we're going to have to look at it, first of all, from the point of view that we're talking about a man who's a great Talmud Chacham. He is a Gomel Chesed. He is a person of great wisdom. He is a man of great integrity. And he is also a man who has devoted his life to the establishment of Malchus based on it. Is it possible for a man of such greatness to make mistakes? Yes. Is it possible that we may be able to understand why he makes the mistakes? Yes. But we dare not ever permit ourselves to think that Yoav ben Tzruya was a killer. Yoav ben Tzruya was a killer. And therefore he's going to go down into that grave. By the way, with regard to the question that you, as we said, you might be asking, the Gemara says, David, when he curses Yoav ben Tzruya in this perek, the pasuk before, so what did he say? Let there come upon his house all of these curses. The Gemara says he was Moser Dino LaShamayim. Moser Dino LaShamayim means that David is not going to be the one who will exact justice from Yoav ben Tzruya. Let God exact justice. Toward the end of his life, he sees that God has not punished Yoav ben Tzruya. He wants Yoav ben Tzruya to suffer on this world, so he shouldn't have to suffer in the world to come. He wanted to make certain that Yoav ben Tzruya would be able to go straight l'chaye ha'olam haba. And he knew that Yoav ben Tzruya therefore must suffer. He cannot die a natural death. All right, we're going to put that in the hopper. In other words, it seems that that David is acting like God, which I never that's something I never like, except of course that there have to be other considerations as well. Huh? Yeah, but I know what she's going to ask. You know, do me, like, she'll tell you, do me a favor. You know, you want to be a Gemilas Chesed, do me a favor. Find me another Gemilas Chesed. There are, when we get to that chapter in Malachim, there are going to be a number of other considerations. And this most probably will be the most, something that we're going to have to understand. Adoniyahu ben Chagit, that's this week's Haftarah. There is a final rebellion toward the very end of David's life. There's another rebellion. Adoniyo ben Chagit, one of his sons at the beginning of Malachim, is the one who takes over the reins of government. And Yoav ben Tzruya joins with Adoniyo ben Chagit when Shlomo is really the one who should become king. On some level, obviously, David also sees Yoav ben Tzruya as being a threat to Shlomo. That you can see already. All right.
Also, the minute you tell me he was a nephew, although you did say he had no aspirations for the throne.
No. He never had aspirations for the throne. All that I'm saying is that as we go through Shmuel, we dare not simply assume that we're dealing with some kind of a power-hungry killer. We're talking about a man who's, we say, dedicated to Malchus Beis David, not blinded by the personality of David to the point that he has become a yes man. He is able to stand up to the king, which is to his credit, because there are times at which he's going to stand up to the king and he's going to be absolutely right. Remember, we also don't ascribe to the idea that the great of Tanakh are infallible. They can make mistakes. Will we say that they are willfully evil? No. Yoav ben Tzruya, at no point is he willfully evil. When David has said not to touch a hair on Avshalom's head, David is talking as a father. Yoav ben Tzruya is talking about the one who understands that Malchus Beis David cannot brook any kind of rebellion. By virtue of the fact that Avshalom is murdered by Malchus David, he rebels against Malchus David, the din is death to a murdered by Malchus. So therefore, Yoav ben Tzruya is most probably right, but it breaks David's heart. And he's ready to break David's heart for the greater good of a Malchus Beis David that is going to be strong and impregnable. Can't have it! Absalom goes ahead and rebels against his father. We will see, and he conquers Yerushalayim. David is going to have to flee from Yerushalayim. Yoav ben Tzruya therefore sees that this is a crime punishable by death, and therefore he doesn't listen to David. Would he have been completely overwhelmed by the charisma of David? He could never have done it. And for that matter, that's what makes Yoav ben Tzruya such a great commander-in-chief. What does a king need? Does he need a yes man, or does he need, as we once said, an Ezer Kenegdo? Well, what was Aviva talking about? Rivka's problem was that she couldn't stand up to Yitzchak. A wife is a real Ezer when she is able to stand up kenegdo against her husband. What does a husband need a wife who's going to be a yes man all the time? Not a bad idea. But no, the growth of course comes as a result of the fact if they are able to disagree civilly with one another, there is growth that comes from the disagreement. But if one is going to have people behind them, why, yes, man, take a look.
Do you know where Malchus Beis David is going to fall? Do you know it's going to crumble? The son of Shlomo, Rechavam, is surrounded by a whole bunch of young people, the yuppies of Malchus Beis David, who give him terrible advice. And they give him terrible advice because they know that that's precisely what the king wants to hear. The people are rebelling against the heavy yoke of taxation. So the young people tell him, you go out there and tell those people, my father taxed you such and such, I'm going to even increase the taxes over you. The burden is going to be greater. Why do the young say that to Rechavam, the son of Shlomo? Because they know that that's precisely what Rechavam wants to hear. What is it that the elders tell Rechavam? The elders tell Rechavam, you know, there are times that you have to bend and bow before the people so that you will gain their confidence and then you'll be a strong leader. But he's brought down, and Malchus Beis David crumbles only because a king is surrounded by yes men. Malchus Beis David rises to its greatness only because of Yoav ben Tzruya. I know that we should have finished another perek today, but I think a lot, many of the psukim and incidents of Malchus Beis David are going to be understood in light of what we said today, but we're going to have to deal with each incident as it comes up, see what the halacha and what the mafarshim have to say about it. Okay.